Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Hours before President Trump left the White House, he announced the pardons of 73 people and commuted sentences of 70 others. One of those unconditional pardons was for South Dakota political operative Paul Erickson. Erickson was convicted of defrauding investors and sentenced to 7 years in federal prison. The statement from the White House said that Erickson's conviction was politically motivated and that he had been charged with what Trump calls a minor financial crime. Seth Tupper covered the Paul Erickson story for the Rapid City Journal, and he's continued that coverage as an SDPB reporter today. He's joining us now from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio inside SDPB's Black Hills studio. Seth, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I want to start with, for folks whose memory has been filled with other things since then, really who Paul Erickson is. When did you first sort of see his name pop up and start finding out who he was?
Yeah, so he was really off the radar for quite a long time. You know, people in politics knew him. But when he really popped into the national consciousness, and when I became aware of him, was in late 2017. The New York Times was doing some in-depth reporting on the Russian collusion investigation, the Mueller investigation, and a story had turned up in the New York Times saying that, according to their reporting, a Republican political operative had offered to arrange a back-channel meeting between President Trump and Vladimir Putin and had promised that he had connections in Russia to do this. And way down deep in the story, they finally named this operative, and it was Paul Erickson. And I got a tip at the time from somebody saying, hey, you know, this guy is from South Dakota. And I thought, What in the world is a guy from South Dakota doing mixed up in the Russia investigation? So I thought, let's find out who this guy is. And I did a in-depth investigative profile on him for the journal and found out that he had been involved in many, many interesting things before he was mixed up in the Russia investigation.
Yeah, including John Wayne Bobbitt's media advisor. If people remember that national story. So not low-level stuff that nobody's heard of. Like, he's got his fingers in some, bigger doings.
Yeah, and just to back up a little bit, he grew up in Vermilion, and he went to USD, ended up going to Yale and getting a degree there. But, you know, he just always seemed to be wherever the action was. When he was in college, he did a skit at the Republican National Convention in Dallas with other college Republicans. Shortly after college, he produced an action movie, an anti-communist action film. He got an executive producer credit on it with a story based Jack Abramoff came up with, who ended up being a lobbyist who himself was convicted of all kinds of corruption. And he sidled up to John Wayne Bobbitt in 1993 and served as his media advisor for a while when they toured the country in that strange episode of John Wayne Bobbitt and his personal troubles and sort of profiting from that with talk shows and merchandise and things all over the country.
Sure. And if you don't know who John Wayne Bobbitt is, I'm just going to let you Google it and enjoy it.
I'm not sure exactly how to describe that.
let's not waste our time. Let's go straight to Paul Erickson's relationship with Maria Butina, because that is not what he's convicted of. But tell me a little bit about his connection with her and that how that comes to light.
Right. So sometime in the last 5 or 6 years, he gets involved with this woman, Maria Butina, who is Russian and has come to the United States. And as we later learn, is working with powerful figures in Russia in conjunction with them to basically infiltrate groups in the United States, including the NRA, the National Rifle Association, and basically try to exert Russian influence on some of these groups. And she teams up with Paul Erickson. They become romantically involved. And we know through later court documents and things that he assisted her allegedly in all kinds of ways. Well, she got charged in 2018 with acting as an illegal foreign agent in the United States without registering as a foreign agent. And her case goes along. And in that case, they name a person called U.S. Person 1. And they never give the name, but this U.S. Person 1 appears repeatedly throughout the court documents as conspiring with Maria Butina. And it later comes out that U.S. Person 1 is Paul Erickson. But prosecutors never charged him with anything in connection with the Butina case. Instead, they come out with charges in 2019 that he defrauded dozens of people throughout many, many years with various business schemes.
Yeah, I want to, before we move on to that, just this question about Butina and Erickson's relationship. There were implications that that relationship was not, you know, that she was reining him in. Was there anything that you saw that was showed that they were in a, you know, in a mutual romantic relationship, or was she taking advantage of him and trying to just use him to get access to some of these circles? Like, what did we end up knowing about that?
I don't think anybody except those two really know, you know, what was going on.
Yeah.
There were conflicting reports, I suppose, is the best way to put it. You know, they were certainly together a lot, and people saw them together a lot, and they acted in conjunction with each other a lot. Whether he was duped by her or she was duped by him or whatever, I'm not sure we'll ever know. Perhaps only those two know.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about the criminal case against him and who his victims are.
Yeah. And so what's interesting about this is that, as you mentioned, the Trump administration came out with a statement yesterday saying that the prosecution against him was politically motivated. And really nothing could be farther from the truth, because if you look into his background all the way back to the 1990s, he had lawsuits and judgments against him from people who got into business with him and gave him money to invest in some kind of venture and then lost all the money. And this trailed him for years and years, long before anybody had ever heard of Maria Butina or the Russian collusion investigation or anything like that. And numerous people sued him over the years, and the allegations were out there in the open in court documents. And his pattern was basically that he would get to know people, gain their trust. He would impress them with his connections in the Republican political world and his, you know, all of his high-profile type activities. And then he would sidle up to him later and say, I've got this great opportunity for an investment. He had kind of a form letter that he would use that's in public court documents that would say, I'm only giving this opportunity to friends and family because it's such a great deal. And people would give him money, $10,000, $100,000, $200,000, whatever, to invest in this scheme. And sometimes the business existed, or maybe it only existed on paper, or maybe it did. Sometimes the business didn't exist at all. But the upshot was that in many cases, he just took that money and put it in his pocket and used it to live his life. And yeah. So that all finally caught up with him. And we're not sure exactly how investigators finally caught on to this. Perhaps when they were looking into Butina is when this came to light, but they eventually charged him in 2019 with defrauding numerous people. And he ended up pleading guilty to wire fraud and money laundering. As you said, sentenced to 7 years in prison and ordered to pay almost $3 million in restitution to more than 50 victims.
Yeah. So that's the big question. Once there is a pardon, do those victims ever see their money back? Were they going to? I mean, was the restitution something that he ever had a chance of paying back? And has that changed? What do you know about the pardon first, I think, is
well,
what
certainly,
I'd like to know first.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, just to answer the question on was he going to pay it back, probably never in full, but he was under an obligation when he got out of prison to pay $500 a month toward this obligation. And
Okay.
I thought about that immediately yesterday, and I called many, many attorneys and finally got to a woman named Margaret Love, who was actually the U.S. pardons attorney during the 1990s, so was in charge of the office that reviews pardon requests for the president. And I asked her, you know, does this mean he doesn't have to pay that $3 million restitution? And here's what she said.
Well, I can tell you for a certainty, with a full pardon and no reservations and no conditions, his restitution is in fact remitted.
So, no, he does not have to pay that, to translate the lawyer speak there.
Right. So that $500 a month is not, he's free and clear at this point.
He's free and clear.
I don't know how long does it take to get processed out of federal prison. I guess I don't know.
I'm not
sure
if he's out yet. The president actually signed this pardon on January 13th, about a week ago. We didn't find out about it until yesterday. So I'm not sure. He may be out of prison. It does take some time to process that and get somebody out of prison.
So does he have a political future? Is he, I mean, what happens to him next? Does he ride the coattails of this was part of a witch hunt, even though the fraud had nothing to do with the Russia investigation? Are you hearing anything from victims or other people about how he is perceived. They clearly don't think that this was a minor financial crime.
Right. I talked to a victim yesterday who requested that I not use the person's name. The person was upset, called this a slap in the face. The interesting thing about Paul Erickson's future, I think, is that for decades he really operated on the fact that he had kind of two identities. Some people knew him as this smooth, connected, suave political operator who could connect people to all these opportunities and was always coming up with these investment ideas. Other people just knew him as a fraud and a phony. But he was able to sort of skate between, skate away from one identity toward the other and always find people to make new investments in whatever venture he was pitching. Well, now that identity has been exposed. He's pleaded guilty to a felony, even though he was pardoned. That's always going to be a part of his record. And, the news stories are always going to be out there. So it'll be, obviously a lot more challenging for him to just sort of pick up where he left off and to try to use his connections to, further his aims like he did in the past, because, he's really taken a hit to his reputation.
Interesting to see if he lays low or if he embarks on his own media tour. Seth Tupper, thank you so much for this story in the days gone by and in the days ahead. We appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
You can read Seth Tupper's original work at rapidcityjournal.com and then the latest stories at sdpb.org/news.